DeLonge, David Kelman, Robert Shaffrin were triplets separated at birth and joyously reunited at the age of 19. The incredible story hit the papers and the world by storm in 1980, but later turned sinister when the circumstances of their separation was revealed to be part of a psychology experiment. In the new documentary, Three Identical Strangers, filmmaker Tim Wardle tells a story that unfolds one layer after another as it examines the age-old question of nature versus nurture. Tim Wardle is a BAFTA-nominated director and executive producer at the award-winning London-based production company Raw. His projects have ranged from the study of violence to murderers in prison for life. His first feature documentary, Three Identical Strangers, just won a special jury prize at Sundance for storytelling. It opens in theaters tomorrow, and I am very pleased that it has brought Tim to the show today. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, DW. Nice to be here.
So it's a tremendous film, and I'm curious to know how you describe it to people. When people ask you what the film is about, what do you say?
It's very tricky, because I don't want to give too much away, but I generally say it's a story of three brothers, triplet brothers, separated at birth and raised by families completely unaware of each other's existence until they were reunited in New York at the age of 19 in 1980.
You were pitched the story of the triplets by a producer while you were head of development at Raw. How did she come across the story?
I'm not entirely sure, actually, which sounds crazy, but she brought it in. I think she may have read a little bit about it in Lawrence Wright's book. Lawrence Wright is a journalist who wrote famous writing The Looming Tower and appears briefly in the film. And he wrote a little bit about the study and this story back in the 90s, I think.
So when you first were told the story, what inspired you about it? What stuck for you?
I think it's just the most extraordinary human story I've ever come across. It's this incredible story of these brothers separated, reunited, and sort of separated again over the course of the film. But it also works on these other levels, as you say. It explores nature versus nurture, family, free will, destiny. So there's big themes.
And so you got the initial pitch, the sort of bones of the story. How did you dive into researching?
It was hard. I mean, the hardest thing is that it exists in this kind of pre-internet era where people are still alive and able to talk about it, but there isn't all that much online resource or information out there. So we had to do quite old-fashioned journalism, go and meet sources, meet people who are involved, research in archive libraries, things like that. It was tough.
So how did you get the brothers and the families to get involved in the project? Was that a long
It was a long process. It took 4 years in total, which sounds crazy. I mean, it took 5 years the whole film to kind of realize to this point now. And when you hear the full extent of what's happened to them and their story, you understand why they might find it hard to trust people, and earning their trust was a huge part of making this film.
So did I understand you correctly that 4 years was the time you spent sort of engaging them to get them to come on board?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. I mean, they lived this kind of Truman Show existence where their lives were being manipulated and controlled in ways that they had no idea about. And the film kind of explores that. And so trying to earn the trust of people who've been treated like that is pretty tricky.
Indeed. So how did you earn their trust?
I think it was just spending time with them and their families and listening to their stories and being very honest about the film that we wanted to make. I think it also helped being British, actually. I was a bit of curiosity to them, and I think they were intrigued by the fact that I was so keen on their story.
So obviously there was some trepidation at the beginning, but when it came together and you realized the brothers would participate, what was your sense about how they felt about their life story being turned into a film?
I think they felt conflicted, because I think they know their story is incredible and they think it's worthy of exploration in a film. But it also required them to go to some very dark and painful places in terms of the things that had happened to them in the past. So it was kind of mixed emotions from them, I think.
I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Tim Wardle about his new documentary, Three Identical Strangers, which opens today. You know, telling someone's story is very personal. When you screened the film for the brothers, from the reporting I've read, they loved it. The subjects of the documentary film don't always have a positive reaction to the end of the product. What did you do to make sure that you captured their story so faithfully?
We did a lot of research. I mean, we spoke to a lot of people. As I say, the one of the advantages of having 4 years getting them on board and raising the funding for the project was that it really enabled us to get this story, which is incredibly convoluted and twisted. I mean, it's like you know, the Usual Suspects has nothing on this in terms of the number of twists and turns, but it allowed us, this time allowed us to get all that straight in our heads, and I think that was really important, that we had a master timeline stretching 40 years. We understood every bit of the story, and that, I think, enabled us to kind of get it clear and get the retelling of it kind of accurate.
When the brothers were first reunited in 1980, Newsday broke this story, and the triplets were, you know, an immediate sensation, Phil Donahue show, all of that. Can you talk about what it was like when the story broke, sort of the atmosphere around the story then?
I mean, it was a huge story. They were on the front cover of, as they say, every newspaper in the world. Phil Donahue, massive show then. I mean, they were, it was, as one of the people in the film says, it was viral. It was viral even in the 80s. You know, everyone was talking about it. But because, I guess, the internet didn't exist then, there's not all that, all those newspaper covers and all the TV pieces, you know, they took a lot of digging to find out. They don't exist online.
So what was it like for the brothers?
Back then?
Right.
I think it was crazy. I mean, they were, you know, and New York in 1980, you know, it was a particular time when the city was kind of the epicenter of culture and music, you know, I would say pretty much for anywhere in the world. And they were out at Studio 54. Annie Leibovitz took them to Studio 54 and was taking their photo. I mean, that's the kind of world that they were thrust into.
The triplets were all adopted from the Louise Weiss Adoption Agency, which was a preeminent agency for Jewish families. What was the reputation of the agency?
The agency was an extremely high-end adoption agency. Upper middle-class families would go there. They were, if you're a Jewish family looking to adopt in the 70s and 80s, that was where you, 50s, 60s, and 70s, that was where you went.
And so you mentioned Lawrence Wright. In 1995, he was the first journalist to contact the triplets about Dr. Neubauer and the twin study for a piece he was working on for The New Yorker. What was his response to your making the film about the triplets?
I think Lawrence, he was intrigued by us making the film. It was sort of an unresolved piece of journalism for him. Like, he always knew that he got close to getting all the facts, but couldn't quite, because there's so much secrecy around this experiment, and the people involved were quite powerful and able to shut down a lot of reporting into it. He always felt like it was kind of unfinished business for him. So I think the fact that we were doing it kind of intrigued him, and he was really really helpful.
Did he share with you the response that he got from the triplets and their families when they first learned about the twin study?
Well, that's in the book that he wrote. Lawrence Wright wrote a book on twins. He started as a New Yorker piece and then ended up being a book. But he absolutely said that, you know, they were pretty shocked. I think as one of the brothers compares it to a kind of Nazi experiment.
Right. So I'll let you control the spoiler alerts. But do tell us, who was Dr. Neubauer and what was his relationship to the Louise Weiss Adoption Agency?
Yeah, as you say, DW, there's a lot of spoilers coming up. So if you want to see the film,
Which you should do.
The colder you can go in, the better. Peter Neubauer was I've been told, the founding father of child psychiatry in America. He was a refugee from the Holocaust in Austria, came to the US and became one of the most preeminent psychiatrists of his generation. He worked at organization called the Child Development Center, which did provide psychological services for adolescents and children. And he had a friend who was working at the Louise Weiss Agency, who was the chief psychiatric consultant there, a woman by the name of Viola Bernard. And together they concocted this experiment.
So in 1981, the state of New York begins to require adoption agencies to keep identical siblings together. Do you think that the story of the triplets had something to do with the change in legislation?
Absolutely. I mean, the triplets finding each other by complete coincidence, it's worth saying. You know, they only found each other because one of them, Bobby, went to college, a small college in upstate New York, and everyone there, when he turned up on the first day, mistook him for his brother who'd been there the previous year. And through this incredible coincidence, they discovered themselves. And once that happened and it was reported in the press, this experiment that had been running was kind of shut down immediately. And also legislation came into force quite soon after, which meant that you couldn't separate identical siblings any longer.
You've said that normally when people delve into difficult things about their past for documentary film, they're put in touch with a psychologist to make sure that they're strong enough to handle the process. The brothers declined that evaluation, right? But you decided to proceed anyway.
Yeah, it was a huge conundrum for us. Like we didn't even know whether we should offer them psychological support or counselling because of what they'd been through at the hands of psychologists. Ultimately, we did make that offer. They declined it, and we took the view that it was okay to proceed. I mean, the offer's still there if they ever change their minds. But I understand why they might not want to do that.
Why do you think that is, that they might not want to do it?
Just because they, you know, if you look at what they've how they've suffered at the hands of psychology and psychiatrists in their lives, it's not surprising perhaps that they don't want to take up that offer. I mean, personally, I feel that having some therapeutic support would actually be really good for them, but it's not my place to kind of force them to take it up, and I respect their decision to not take up our offer.
You said, "I'm not interested in making a film about goodies and baddies. I want to make a film about human beings and all of their rich and troubling complexity." That's a great quote. Can you talk more a little bit about that, especially in the context of this film?
Sure. So, I mean, I guess the central one of the central questions of the film is these people who are running this experiment, what was their motivation? Why did they do it? You know, it seems so obviously unethical from today's standpoint. As I've said, you know, I'm not interested in painting them as just evil, bad people, because I don't think they were. They were actually very right on liberal people. They were just involved in this one thing that was very unethical. And I think that exploring those motivations is always fascinating. Lawrence Wright, the journalist you mentioned, has this phrase he calls his noble cause corruption, which he uses to explain why good people do bad things in the pursuit of a greater goal. And I think what happened here is these people were potentially well-intentioned. They just lost sight of the ethical and personal impact on the people who were participants in their study.
Did you ever ask the triplets if they would have preferred not to have known about the study?
It's a really good question. I did ask them that. It isn't in the film, and it's something that intrigued me. And Bobby said to me, "How can you ask that question? You know, the joy I had with my brothers, even though it turned to sadness later, would override any, you know, the negatives."
And did his brother share that feeling? Or
I think so. I can't remember how David answered that, actually. But, I mean, it is a fascinating question. You know, if they hadn't met each other, a lot of bad things that happened to them may not have happened, and they may be happily living their lives as individuals today, not knowing they had brothers.
From the brothers and their families to the production team to you personally, what is the general feeling about this question of nurture versus nature?
We changed our opinion almost every day making the film. I mean, I came into it very much from a nurture perspective. I believe that how our environment and how we, you know, raise our children really shapes who they are. And as I made the film, I would meet some people who were very adamant that biology is massively dominant and that our genes determine who we are and what we do in our lives. So it was quite scary, you know, when you start going down that route, because you end up in quite a dark eugenicist kind of worldview. I think ultimately we ended up with a kind of mix of the two, thinking that it's both nature and nurture that kind of makes us who we are. But it definitely made me think very long and hard about this question, and I hope it will do the same with audiences.
Well, what do you want people to feel or to even maybe perhaps learn after watching the film?
I mean, I think the film's quite a wild ride, particularly if you go in relatively cold, and I hope that people go in and experience a wide range of emotions, from joy to sadness to anger. I've seen that in audiences, pretty much every audience who's seen the film, and I want them to come away asking themselves questions about who we are and why we are the people we are, whether nature or nurture shapes us into the people we are, but also about family and what is family. Is family about who you're genetically related to, or is it about love ultimately?
Well, it's not only a complicated story, but an absolutely captivating one, and I congratulate you on the achievement. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, DW.
I'm DW Gibson, and I've been speaking with director Tim Wardle about his new documentary, Three Identical Strangers. Three Identical Strangers opens tomorrow at Angelica Film Center in the Landmark at 57 West. There will be Q&As at Angelica tomorrow after the 7:20 p.m. and 9:10 p.m. screenings, and Q&As at the Landmark on Saturday after the 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. screenings.